Okay, here we go. Something,
we came to hijack something, your brain. Something, we came to hijack something, your brain. We say what we like and have a blast.
Okay, here we go.
Welcome once again. It is time for another episode of the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm James Hatton with...
I'm Podcast Rob.
And we have a special guest sitting afar across the interwebs.
We do. Our neighbor to the north, as they say. we have Cyanide from Little Geek Lost.
Hello.
Hello. You're in, your friend from the north, you're in, Canada?
Yes, I am, way up here.
Whereabouts?
Thunder Bay, Ontario.
Okay, my sister lives in Edmonton, so it's a bit of a hike.
Far. Yeah. Yeah. I'm about 6 hour drive north of Minneapolis.
Gotcha.
Ooh, okay.
And that's about half an hour away from the border.
So why don't you tell all of our fine listener about Little Geek Lost.
Listener. I have a website called Little Geek Lost where I do some blogs, mainly podcasts, a lot of other random junk. Basically, I dump my brain out onto the internet for the people to enjoy.
Excellent. You'll fit right in here because we've been dumping our brain onto a podcast for the last 2 years.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, Rob, do you want to tell the world what our episode is about on this fine feathered day?
This is another sort of concept-y kind of show that I had rolling around in my brain for a while. We haven't done one of our list shows in a fair amount.
Yeah, we've been way too popular lately.
Yeah, well, I mean, the pop culture happenings of movies and stuff coming out, the stars have just aligned that it made sense to tackle a lot of that stuff as we were recording. But we're doing a thematic episode that we can come back to over and over again for any genre that we want. It is, we're calling it Defined, and we're talking about the 80s. We each came up with a list of 10 things that we think just reek of the 80s. It's a time period we all grew up in, some of us much younger than others were at the time, but I think it was, there was enough iconic stuff that hit only in those 10 years that it's worth discussing and reliving, and well, maybe painfully so.
I agree. I will say that looking at my list, the way you just put that, I didn't put as much stuff that was the definitive universal 80s. I went with stuff that was very, like, my 80s. So,
Okay. So
there might be some, like, people are like, I know. I'm sure most of them are pretty on spot with sort of the universal what we were kids and doing and hanging out with. But I think I have one or two that people are going to be like, yeah, there goes Hatton again on one of his stupid tears.
Well, but that's fair, though. But, I mean, the 80s are what they did to you. You know what I mean? So everybody's 80s might be a little bit different.
Court case pending.
What was that?
I said court case pending.
Well, yes, that's true. And there are certain things we just can't talk about until that's settled on the advice of counsel. But there are some things that are just overarching that, you know, it just screams from a mountaintop, 80s and nothing else.
Right. So Cyanide, are you a definitive child of the 80s?
Yeah, I was born in 81, so.
Oh, yeah, you're right in the wheelhouse.
Grew up in the 80s.
Jesus.
But see, my list is probably going to be a little bit different because I was a girl in Canada in the 80s.
Oh, you're going to have, like, weird candy bars that we've never heard of, like Luck Lucks and weird, like, chocolate gumdrop thing. I don't know candy.
Probably.
But I do know that anytime my sister's down, she always brings me, like, moose bars and craziness.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Well, if it's any heads up, when we were discussing this through Twitter earlier in the week, She threatened me with that she was going to make a list of the top 10 cute butts of the 80s.
Yes.
Did you do this?
So,
no, but I do have some on my list.
Oh, so it's not an entire 10, just a smattering of butts.
Just like 9.5.
I would like
I'm
everybody
so sorry
now.
For that guy that's only a half.
I would like now everybody to just close their eyes and imagine a smattering of butts.
Yeah,
it's a horrible adjective for that.
Imagine half a butt.
Well, it'd just be one cheek.
Oh, I was going to say, was he really hot and then just like completely let himself go? And it would...
No, he only got photographed on one side.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Good side, bad side kind of thing.
Yeah. So Rob, go ahead. Damn.
Since Cyanide is our guest, why don't we let her kick things off?
Yes.
I think it'll also set a tone for the show.
Oh, I like it. We're setting tones.
So do you want me to go through like my whole list or just a few?
We'll do one at a time. So just hit your top one, and then we'll go around the room, so to speak, and we'll let everybody get their say in.
So my top one is Fluorescent Everything.
Because
I think that pretty much defined the 80s.
I owned a lot of so I had a lot of hand-me-downs. So I had a lot of like neon surfer shirts, and being a fat kid that lived in New Jersey, it was clearly a big facade. But they were all fluorescent neon.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's fluorescent. Yep. That's kind of like what defined the 80s for me.
That is a good call.
Did you wear like a lot of the fluorescent pinks and oranges and the et ceteras?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I even had a Hypercolor t-shirt.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And it was a pink and blue one. Mm. So it was blue and then turned pink when it was warm. So we definitely had that. And there was, I should have actually looked it up, but there was that clothing company with like a dog. I don't remember it offhand. But there's a lot of fluorescent stuff. I mean, it might have been weird stuff in Canada. But yeah, like everything. Fluorescent yellow, a lot of fluorescent pink, for sure.
So you had a hypercolor shirt. You were a cool kid. I see
yes.
how it is.
No, I wasn't. I've been a nerd my whole life, so I was definitely not a cool kid. But yeah, definitely fluorescent everything. Is kind of what I see. I mean, even when you look at now too, when they have like the 80s, you know, theme parties and stuff, that's kind of like what you go to wear stuff from the 80s. You go look for fluorescent stuff.
And there's a lot of black light that goes on at these 80s parties too, to make that neon stuff even more.
Oh yeah.
Annoying.
Yeah.
That was not the word I was expecting to come after that. It'll make these parties all just sort of fucking horrible. Migraine inducing.
No, but she's right though. There's nothing like, I mean, it's almost like a Mum and Shant show from the electric company. You don't see the people. It's so pitch black. All you see is like fluorescent sunglass frames, fluorescent poodle skirts and blouses, and like a scrunchie that's jammed over somebody's head because you know they're rocking the side ponytail because it's 80s night. It's just these weird bits of clothing hovering around in this pitch black area.
Are those like
I've only seen
those
pictures.
T-shirt rings?
Yeah, right.
Where you like shove the bottom of your t-shirt through?
Yeah.
So fluorescent on the board.
Yep. Fluorescent everything.
Rob, what do you got?
It ties into some of the stuff because I had, I was going to start with fashion, and it was the surfer shirts.
God, I'm sorry.
What was that?
I'm the Venn diagram cross between these two.
No, exactly. But there were so many of them. I mean, look at all the, there was Hobie, there was Ocean Pacific, there was Quicksilver, there was Ron John Surf Shop, there was, you know, like everything, there were all these people trying to portray, like, you know, the beach lifestyle. The thing that I remember about Ron John was that you couldn't really buy them online. You had to buy them from the stores. And there was a store in California and there was a store in Orlando. So, like, anybody could go to the mall and pick up, like, a Panama Jack shirt or an Ocean Pacific shirt. But if you saw somebody wearing a Ron John shirt, it was like, oh, they've actually been there. Like, this wasn't just something that they, you know, picked up off the rack somewhere.
Oh, like the Hard Rock. Like, you know, like you had a friend who went to the Hard Rock.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, those Hypercolor shirts too were so. Ugh.
Were you just jealous of them?
No, I mean, again, I wouldn't wear the Hypercolor shirts because, as Hatton said, you know, we were fat kids in Jersey, so a fat kid wearing a Hypercolor shirt, it was a mess.
You were asking to be stenciled on.
It really was, because the Hypercolor shirts I saw, like, they were kind of like a purple and blue that would turn to, like, a green and orange or a yellow and orange when they were warm. So it wasn't even just a flat color. It was almost a semi-tie-dyed color. So now you're talking about an overweight kid who sweats a lot in the summer wearing a Hypercolor shirt. I mean, it literally just looked like, you know, they put on a box of crayons in the morning and then stepped into an oven. So it was never a good look.
Yeah, you look less fashionable and more just splotchy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I took a shortcut through a paint factory to get to school.
So I will go with my fashion one, since that's the portion of the show we're in, and I chose snap bracelets.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Banned from schools because kids were unfortunately cutting their own wrists.
Yeah.
But
did you know that when you peeled off the cloth, it was just a tape measure inside?
Yeah, a tape measure. Yeah, some sort of like rigid metal sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we used to. That they were all of the rage for 30 seconds. I think my school like had them and banned them within 2 weeks. Because everybody was slapping. It was all you did all day. Snap bracelets on each other, and then they were gone. You'd look around.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah, your parents snuck in and stole all your snap bracelets, and they had all of the cool patterns.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it wasn't just snap bracelets, too. I mean, for you, that may have been very specific, but there was a lot of wrist jewelry that became amazingly and retardedly popular in the 80s, too.
Oh, yeah, my sister had I think, as many jelly bands.
Jelly bracelets.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or, like, people walking around with, like, armfuls of, like, 15 or 18 Swatch watches because they were, like, $4 a piece.
Yeah.
And, like, none of them were all set to the same time. They were just wearing them to wear them.
Yeah, and they weren't trying to be cool, like, having all the stock market times on their wrist. It was just whatever.
Oh, look, in London, it's according to my Swatch watch. No, shut up.
It's like putting up the frame of the picture without taking the picture out.
So yes, it's just, exactly.
Who's this family? I don't know. They came with the frame.
The picture was so in focus, though. I just wanted to leave it.
It was well put together, well framed. But yeah, the slap bracelets, and they would start to fray after a while. So, you know, you had just like this weird neon fray off the side of it. And friends who knew what they were doing could leave like red marks all over your arm just slapping bracelets on each other.
Well, fashion and a weapon.
Yes. like a first grade shiv.
Yeah, exactly.
Cyanide, what you got?
Suffering from your heart.
Well, and keeping with fashion, I've got slouchy socks.
Okay.
I'm not sure I know what this one is, so please hit me.
There's leg warmers, and then there's slouchy socks, and they're like big socks that kind of go up to your knees, and then you just like slouch them down to your ankles, kind of like leg warmers. Which leg warmers fit too, so it's like slouchy socks / leg warmers.
Okay, so they looked kind of like stockings that would sort of fall down and like bunch up around your ankle.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they're like really wide, so they'd like kind of poof out around your ankles.
You never had those girls in high school when you were in high school, Haddon, that had like they would wear like three or four different colors of socks. So they would start with like the white, and then it would be like the blue and the pink or whatever, and they just stacked these scrunched down socks on top of each other.
I can see it in my head now. I don't think it was much of a thing around when I was. In there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not. They might have. I wasn't allowed to make eye contact with women in high school, so.
Well, leg warmers kind of fit into that, too, because they're the same kind of thing. You usually kind of slouch them down and didn't really use them to keep your leg warms. Your legs warm.
I follow.
It did kind of defeat the purpose of having these things that are supposed to come up to your knee, and then you're just going to cram them down around your ankle. So,
I was waiting for you, Rob.
Sudden dead silence.
I had nothing
again,
to add to the leg warmers.
With the fashion theme. I'm going to go with Chuck Taylor All Stars.
Oh
yeah.
Now they're still very popular, and that's because the form of them is a classic. But I'm talking about the fact that people used to go into shoe stores and buy two different colors so they could not wear the same color sneaker. Like, it was a very big thing in my high school where you would wear one blue and one red, and then the next day you would wear the opposite pair. So they're buying multiple colors so they could mix and match their sneakers. And they were wearing them to prom, so people had to match their red bow tie and red cummerbund with their red all-star Chucks. Very bizarre.
I'm dead. I you want to know what? Kind of surprised and intrigued at the dedication to wearing a left color on Monday and then the opposite version of that on the right the next day. That's just dedication to your need to be sort of fashion forward.
Okay, it shows a need for something.
Yeah, I mean, I had a pair in high school that I bought a pair of white ones and I dyed them purple. So I had a pair of blue Chucks all through high school. Like, people used to like know, hey, Jamie's there. That's Jamie. You can see the purple shoes.
I like how you said you dyed them purple, so you had a pair of blue Converse.
Yeah.
Did I say
because
blue?
That purple writ dye never really stayed as like a really true purple. You got it in that boiling water. You're like, hey, this is going to look awesome. And you take them out and you're like, hey, this is not really like I was hoping it was going to come out to be.
No, mine end, I don't know what I did magically. Maybe it's because maybe I double ridded them. I don't remember what, but they were more of a lavender purple than like a deep purple, but they were purple.
There you go.
Yeah, if we had white shoes, we just kind of like wrote on them.
Yeah, that was big. Sharpie markers and pens all over mm-hmm. and whatnot.
All right, so we have the shoes, we got the fashion. I'm going to take us in a different direction. I'm going to hit us with toys.
Okay.
Because I have a couple toys on mine, but my 80s toy du jour. And I've had people that have no idea what it is, so it's so confusing. Constructs? Yeah.
Okay.
No,
this is my weird one.
Weren't they like the Erector set kind of stuff?
They were like Erector sets, yeah. So they're not like Legos. They were more like Capsilla, if you remember Capsilla, which was like gears and tubes and stuff.
Right.
Constructs were girders with little bolts that you put on, and you could make basically architecture.
I think I remember those.
So you would have these short and long sort of beams. I didn't have Legos. This is what I had. I think it's because my dad would get them cheap. And they would fit together and make sort of walls, and then you also had these plastic plates that you would fit into these walls so you could make, again, buildings, spaceships, that sort of thing. It was very, very sci-fi oriented, where Lego was sort of, you could be anything. No, Constructs, you have to stick with science fiction because you're not going to make this look like a castle.
You have to build skyscrapers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the Transformer scene in Big when he's like, well, it's a building. Turns into a robot in a building. Fun in that. No fun in that. But yeah, I remember I very specifically had a pillowcase full of these things, and that would be my afternoon, is just building gigantic buildings and mazes, and usually my action figures would go on adventure. They were basically set designing for my action figures, unlike Legos, where, you know, you can make adventures with just figures and everything. These guys didn't have figures. They're just making buildings. Look them up, Constructs. They were cool.
There you go. The thing about Legos, too, is that unless you were building the specific Lego set, if you tried to, like, you know, go off book and be creative, it never looked right because you were always matching, like, you know, 19 different Lego colors to make your castle wall because the set wasn't designed around that.
Yeah, everything was a rainbow.
Yeah.
Or you were missing, the worst is when you were missing just one more brick. So it's your beautiful castle, except for the blue spot in the bottom right.
Yeah. Did you ever watch, I think it's on Hulu, James May's Toy Story?
Can't say that I have.
No.
He takes toys from his childhood and he updates them to, like, now and ridiculous bigger, better things. And he does an episode on Lego where, you know, everybody used to build the Lego houses when they were a kid. Well, now I'm an adult, and I want to build a Lego house. But not like a Lego house. I want to build a house. out of Lego.
So he builds a house out of Lego.
So he gets this whole team, and they basically make these cinder block-sized bricks out of standard-sized Legos. Like, they figure out how many Legos it takes to make
take
a Lego brick
Legos.
The size of a cinder block. And then they build a two-story house with, like, those crazy clear Lego windows, and it has a couch and, like, a coffee table and chairs and everything inside and a bed, and the entire thing is made out of Legos.
Wow.
It's hilarious.
It's a really uncomfortable couch.
Oh, absolutely. To say nothing of the toilet that they built. But, yeah, James May's Toy Stories, they do a couple of other ones, but the Lego one, since you mentioned it, was actually very entertaining.
There's a couple really great Lego docus, if you like that sort, on Netflix, where they talk about, like, one of the most lauded position in all of toydom is being one of the sort of Lego architects, where all your job is to do is to sit with Legos and come up with interesting ways to put them together.
There you go.
Craziness. Wow. So that was me.
We were playing a trivia board game up in New Hampshire a couple years ago with some friends of mine. And one of the questions was, based on a percentage fail,
okay,
if a Lego factory has two Lego bricks that aren't to form, like aren't to spec, how many have they produced in general? Like, what, you know, if it's, is it 1 out of 100? Is it 1 out of 1,000 kind of thing? So if they have 2 wrong, how many have they printed in mass to get those 2 wrong according to their scale? And it was something like 19 million.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
So their like, you know, spec ratio is ridiculous as far as perfectionism goes on those bricks. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah, they make that one
thing.
They
kind of have to be.
Yeah, that's their one job.
Yeah, you have one job. Make little tiny plastic bricks with very sharp edges.
Make perfect squares.
Yeah.
That hurt so
There's
bad.
A... Fact Check Manny has told me about a burlesque show.
Please tell me how this relates
to
Legos.
Like a sideshow kind of thing.
Okay.
Where instead of doing, like, walking on glass or walking on fire, because everybody does that now,
right,
the guy, like, empties out a pillowcase full of Legos and walks barefoot on Legos. And it's like the minute he does it, everybody's just like, no!
Having seen people do the glass walking so many times, I think it would be like seeing it for the first time on Legos. It would invoke
yeah,
that feeling.
That'd be painful.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many of us can relate to walking on glass or walking on fire. So there's a little bit of a mental disconnect there when we see, well, I mean, we're sure it has to hurt, but we have nothing to connect it to. But we've all stepped on that little fucking one dot Lego or those little two dot Legos at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it hurts like a bitch.
Yeah.
So when we see somebody dump those out, I'm going to walk barefoot on these, you know, we start crying. Please, no.
All right, Cyanide, what do you got next?
Okay, so for toys, I've got Cabbage Patch Kids.
Oh, ooh. Yes. Did you not have
the
one, Rob?
The 80s toy.
Well, no, because I wasn't... I mean, clearly I wasn't a Cabbage Patch Kid kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a listing of worldwide conflicts, and I do have Cabbage Patch Kids listed under that, though, so...
We'll get there. So how many do you have, Zynan?
I have four. I have four, and I still have all of mine. And they still actually smell like they did. Because that was the thing, like, they had, like, this baby powder smell.
Mm-hmm.
And they still smell.
Wow.
So I have Ricky, who's a boy. I have Lila. I have Rebecca. And then I have a newborn one that I don't think I ever really gave a name to.
Lump.
How long have you had that one?
Probably since I think I got the last one probably when I was maybe 8-ish. So, yeah.
But I only...
So what you're saying is you have a 20-year-old infant that has to this day just been called the kid.
Yeah.
You haven't bothered to name it?
No. Like, I don't ever remember naming it.
I had one. His name
is
Lance.
Is there a Cabbage Patch Kid equivalent of CPS?
Oh. Dollfuss.
Probably, you can't take them away. They've been through a lot. The one Ricky got like run over by my friend's bike, and so he had like a rip in his neck, so now he's got like his neck sewn up. And like our old house, the basement got flooded, and they were like in this Tupperware bin, like a big Rubbermaid one, that tipped over, and so they actually got kind of wet, but I managed to save them from that flood, so they've been through a lot.
They've seen some shit.
I'm picturing this live action Cabbage Patch Kid just horror show.
No, I'm good to my toys.
Okay. Except for not naming them and having their necks ripped out with bicycles. And
my friend ran over it. It wasn't me.
Uh-huh.
You could tell that to Dollfuss. But yeah, that was the thing. Do they have any of the? Are they all just the kids, or did they have like some of them had jobs? Or
no, they were just like the regular kid ones.
Yeah, I had the bald one. His name was Lance. I had him until I want to say like only not forever ago did I get rid of a box of old toys, and he was in there, and I felt kind of guilty doing it too.
Yeah, like, how can you get rid of it?
I thought I was growing up.
But it doesn't matter. Like you can't get rid of them.
I have other toys that I kept, but the Cabbage Patch Kid, I don't know why I made that final decision. You know what? I might, when I'm still going through boxes, I might still find them. I'll let Chuck.
He came back.
Yeah, exactly.
Snuck back in.
He's not leaving me.
Well, and there was like a big resurgence of them lately too. Like a few years ago, they like came back. There were their new ones.
Which sounds equally horrifying.
Yeah.
They're back.
They all came back for your souls.
The night the cabbage patches rose.
It's like children of the corn.
Yeah. Big wide-eyed sticker children, sticker-eyed children of the corn.
Yep. With stamps on their butts.
Oh, that's true. They all what was his name? Xavier. What was it? Xavier Roberts.
Yeah.
I can't believe I remembered that. That just came out of like a filing cabinet in my brain. Rob, you got any toys?
I do. I'm going to transition into music for this one thing.
All right.
I was going to get to it eventually, but...
With cyanide said no.
Damn it.
Toys. Stay on topic.
You haven't listened to the show much.
Yeah, clearly. You have not listened to anything we've done before.
I'm surprised we're still talking about the 80s and not talking about pasta.
I want to get into this here because I don't want to have it at the end of the show. I want to get back into more fun stuff at the end of the show. Because of what has recently gone on in current pop culture news, and because I have him listed in my music anyway, I wanted to touch on the Prince album, Purple Rain.
Uh-huh. I understand.
I wore the fuck out of that album in my car. Fantastic album. My first contact with Prince. I hadn't had anything of his before that. And he did have a couple albums that came out before that. But I think he really became big and mainstream with the Purple Rain CD. Tons of singles off of it. I don't know that there's a song on that album that didn't become a single. But because of current news and what happened with him passing away recently, I did want to touch on this. The last time we had a celebrity pass, we ended up doing a whole episode about it. The timing of when we release our episodes makes it a little weird for us to get into it a couple weeks from now, so I wanted to make sure that at least we touched on it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
In some way in this one. And talking about the 80s, it pretty much completely fits in. Sure, his career transcended the 80s into current, but that look that he had with the purple sequin trench coat and the big flowery poet shirts and the big jerry-curled hair and whatnot and the purple motorcycle, that just screamed 80s as far as the eye could see. So,
the man
Purple
owned.
Rain soundtrack.
The man owned a color.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he did. They actually, there's pictures on Twitter now and on the internet where he was apparently getting ready to do a concert called Piano and Mike. Just him, a piano, and a microphone. That was it. No band, no nothing else. And Yamaha custom made a baby grand piano for him that was color matched to a couch that he had in his house.
Oh, wow.
And he got it delivered like 2 weeks before he passed away. But he posted pictures of it, and the particular color purple it is, it's pretty ridiculous. But yeah, when you see a musician
purple?
And they're wearing purple, you're either going, oh, that's Prince, or hey, he stole that from Prince. It was one of those things.
Yeah, Prince wasn't as big in my household, except my eldest sister was huge, like in love with Prince. And I know she watched Purple Rain 100 times. And for those who have never had a chance to see it, and I know most of you haven't, but if you get a chance and you're out hanging out with us and there's a chance you can get Podcast Rob to do karaoke Purple Rain, holy shit. I think that was the first time I ever saw you sing. Was
It may have been.
We were at the, I want to say it was a Renaissance Festival dinner. And
oh, God.
Yeah.
And they had the live band there.
Yep.
And I talked them into playing that.
Yep. I remember that I was like, why is Rob going up to the microphone? Not knowing you could sing like a bat out of hell. And you do Purple Rain and the whole room just shut the fuck up.
Wow. Nice. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I did have, there was another karaoke place where I got up there and did, I did Purple Rain, and then me and my friend did Lean on Me.
Okay.
And he wasn't letting us do any more R&B songs after that. I said, why not? And he said, because you're making us look bad.
I understand.
Nice.
So,
I think like for me, Prince, I remember my parents actually having the Purple Rain record. I don't know how much they actually listened to it, but I remember them actually like having it. But I think, I don't know, was it that one that When the Doves Cry was on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably like the song I associate most with Prince.
Yeah.
The kid of the 80s.
That's probably that and Darling Nikki, which both are from that album.
Mm hmm.
Are the songs that I always connected.
Oh, you say two wildly different songs.
Yeah, very much so.
True.
Darling Nikki was the song that made Tipper Gore go nuts and have her start pushing the government to put parental advisory stickers on albums.
Wow.
And it's what's funny is, you know, I think the only word in that song that would raise a flag is masturbation.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Because everything else in that song is kind of insinuative and suggestive. It's just the one thing where she's sitting there and diddling herself in the hotel lobby.
Right, yep. Nope, and that was apparently that was the line that she heard that she freaked out about. And, oh, my God, how are we letting kids buy this? And that's where the whole thing came from.
Tipper Gore has got to be the worst light ever. She just sounds so boring.
Yeah.
The opinions of James Hatton are not necessarily the opinions of this podcast.
I don't.
Not
think...
that I think she's a fantastic play.
Say,
let me throw that out there too. Not throw the other side of the coin out there, saying, you know, she's a wildebeest and bet or anything. I would not know.
You hoping she hits you up?
Throw the digits, Gore.
Call me. Hey, if she listens to the podcast, I'd be happy. I don't care if she. I don't care if she hits me up or complains.
If she's heard of the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty good feat.
There you go.
All right.
So what do you got now that I've drawn us off the path of toys there, Hatton? You want to reel us back in or?
Let's see. I could go back to toys. I will go back to the toy for me. This is, in fact, the toy that defined my a Christmas for me, as well as like was pretty much my universe for forever. And that is Christmas morning. And this was back when, you know, my family was a little more well-to-do, so we would get, like, really, really, we would get a nice Christmas. And I opened up the first package, and it was the Green Lion. And then I was like, oh, they got me the Green Lion. That's the greatest. All I need are, like, 6 others. 1 gift later, Red Lion. No. There's, like, 4 more boxes sitting over there. They can't all be, oh, motherfucker, they were Voltron.
Nice.
Now there's a second side to that story where I guess it was a year, maybe 2 later, probably next year, where I opened up one package and I was like, oh, it's the yellow vehicle foot from Vehicle Voltron. And I looked over and there's like 32 really tiny packages.
No.
And
was,
shit.
No.
Lightning only struck only once here. Oh, damn it.
Land, air, sea, Voltron.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, the five lion Voltron that was on the playground, that's what you were playing. You were riding on the swings and you were picking your lion. And no boy wanted to be picked the blue lion because that means you're the princess. Yep. And then they introduced Sven later as the former pilot. And you're like, all right, cool. We got Sven. Now boys can also be the blue lion because girls were not allowed to play Voltron.
You hurt me, James Hatton.
Why?
You really do.
Because you understand this game?
He was the blue lion.
I do, but they did not then create Sven. Sven was the original pilot of the Blue Lion.
I know
he
that.
He was in the very first episode of Voltron.
I know.
And two-thirds of the way through,
they found him in a pit.
Supposedly died.
Right.
And that was when they couldn't make Voltron without another pilot, so Princess jumped into the Blue Lion.
You're totally correct.
It was originally a boy's lion.
Yes. And whereas Jamie, older, grown up, has sadly watched more Voltron than he cared to admit as a grown up, know all of that. But as a child who only got to see it when it showed up on TV occasionally, probably not in the right order, and the whole shebang, also being, I want to say first, second grade, the blue line was the girl line. And this is the way the playground ran, sir.
Your playground was a very sad playground.
Yes. I've told you about my childhood. I wasn't allowed to play Voltron. I just watched. I had to be the fucking mouse.
You weren't the head.
I'm not even. Every joke that came into my head right there, no.
Exactly. when all the other kids played Battle of the Planets, you got to play One Rover One. You were just the dog at the bottom of Center Neptune.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
But yeah, so Voltron, he ruled over my action figure world forever. When I moved on to wrestling figures, he was the world champ. yeah, Voltron pretty much was the toy for me. So the fact that I have not the original metal one, which I had when I was the kid, God knows where those pieces are. I have a other Voltron now. I have the big rider one that had the toys that actually fit into to the lions. A friend of mine gave me that a couple years ago. I'm just happy to have him.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you? Nice. Did you do Voltron at all, Cyanide?
No, but I do have girl toys.
I'm down. Hit it.
Like the Blue Lion?
No, like Rainbow Bright and My Little Pony.
Okay.
Even though My Little Pony's made a comeback, I'm not really into the whole comeback of My Little Ponies. It was when I was a kid, and that was good enough. But mainly like Rainbow Bright. There was actually like the movie and there was like a soundtrack with it, like the cassette tape for the movie. So I had that and I'd actually like listen to it and then acted out with my dolls and everything in my room. Me and my friend would act out the movie with the dolls for Rainbow Bright. We were pretty big into that.
Yeah. My favorite, I've seen a Rainbow Bright movie, which, what is that? Star Takers? I don't know.
Yeah. Something like that.
It had that, the black horse. The metal, like, hardcore, like, heavy metal horse.
Yep.
I used to love that stupid thing.
Oh, yeah. It was very weird, like, looking back now. I mean, like, when you're a kid, you don't realize it. But, like, looking back now, how, like, just bizarre and out there everything was in it. And I think that's what makes it kind of cool. When you're a kid, you don't realize these things are just, like, really fucked up.
Yeah. They were all color. All the different Rainbow Bright characters were all color names, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm trying to get
like weird. I don't even remember who like the villain was offhand, but just like weird, bizarre stuff. Like the other one with the like Strawberry Shortcake was into that, and there was like a Flower Princess one and stuff too. And everything was like always like color associated. So, like, no matter what, it was Rainbow Bright was the same way, Strawberry Shortcake, you know, they all had, like, their color associations and their smells.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, another princess one, and they're, like, flowers and stuff, so they were all, like, color-coded. It seemed like that was a big deal in the 80s.
It's easy for girls to remember with their simple girl brains.
Yeah. Which color are you?
Yeah, the my sister was into the Strawberry Shortcakes and a little bit of the Rainbow Bright, but more she was real into Strawberry Shortcakes. And I remember they all smelled really good. We'd all like sit and just, oh, this one smells like blueberry muffins.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had to look this up. Apparently the villains for Rainbow Bright were Dismal.
Oh, yeah. And Lurky was the other one.
Yep, Lurky and Monstro Merc and Robot Bright.
Yeah, Murky and Lurky. Because they didn't like colors.
Yeah, didn't they like steal color from places?
Yeah.
Like they would make it all gray?
Yep.
It'd go all old-timey.
Yeah.
We're going to go take the Rainbow Kids.
Yeah, those are my girl toys of the 80s.
I don't judge. I used to, you wonder what I've seen, I know I watched some of the Rainbow Bright cartoons because they were on in the same sort of like rock block as other cartoons I had watched. So I know I saw episodes of that and, oh, what was the other one I saw? Oh, Care Bears. I used to watch Care Bears fairly regularly.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, did you have any smelly girl toys?
I did not. Weird. Unfortunately.
Color-coded toys?
No, not that I could think of.
The only toy I had that smelled was Stinkor from He-Man.
Okay.
He was a skunk, and he smelled. And the truth of it is in the same way that your Cabbage Patch Kids still smell like baby powder, mm-hmm. whatever oil, and this is apparently proven, whatever oil or like weirdness they put into side Stinkor still smells.
It's real skunk oil.
It's apparently like they put like linseed and like other sorts of like long lasting scents in there. So it's this mix of like garbage patchouli smell.
Weird.
So people have found their Stinkor toy and he still reeks.
Wow.
Mine mysteriously disappeared after I owned it for probably about a month.
Mysteriously disappeared, in yeah. finger quotes.
I had a She-Ra castle. My Thundercats lived in it.
Nice.
They just took it over.
Yeah. Well, they moved in with She-Ra and the other She-Ra people.
Oh, they didn't.
I see.
They didn't kick She-Ra out. This wasn't like rent.
No. No. They didn't like just bust in and were like, "We're taking it."
That cartoon I would have watched.
Thundercats eviction notices.
Exactly. Thundercats versus She-Ra.
Digging it.
All right. So since we seem to have gone into TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I've got a great TV show.
Okay.
I have a Canadian TV show. I'm wondering whether we'll cross streams here.
Ooh.
It might be it.
All right.
But definitive 80s Canadian TV show, Degrassi.
Ah.
Degrassi Junior High. Not there's kids at Degrassi Street, there's Degrassi Junior High, and then there's Degrassi High. I think Degrassi High kind of like crossed 80s to 90s, but Degrassi Junior High all the way.
Yeah, Degrassi lasted for like 100 years, didn't it?
Yeah, and then there's like weird new Degrassi on now, but I don't watch that. But Rocks. Degrassi Junior High, definitive 80s Canadian TV show. It was like the stuff that they had on there, like, was like how after school specials are, but I mean they talked about abortion, pregnancy in high school, suicide. Like, you don't really get that on children's TV shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not so much.
Rob, did we have anything that played Degrassi here? Because I knew
it was a thing.
I
think like Cartoon Network or something plays it now, but not like back then.
Because I was always weirded by it because, what is it, Chasing Amy. It might be Chasing Amy. One of the movies. Kevin Smith specifically mentions watching Degrassi. Oh, yeah, it was Chasing Amy. He mentions watching Degrassi High because he, you know, just likes watching schoolgirls say a boot.
Yeah. You don't say a boot.
Yeah, some Canadians do. But
no, Degrassi Junior High was amazing.
But I always wondered, because Kevin Smith is from New Jersey. We're from New Jersey. And I'm just like, where did he see Degrassi?
He's just obsessed with Canada.
Fair.
I mean, it's probably been on something in the States because a lot of Americans have heard of it, at mm-hmm. least, maybe seen parts of it. So it must have been on somewhere.
So now, can you go, have you watched any more recently? Like, have you tried to sit back and watch an episode of Degrassi now?
Yeah, for sure. Like, it was a few years ago, my husband had to get his wisdom teeth out, and so he was all laid up on the couch, and I'm like, we're fucking watching Degrassi from the first episode of Degrassi Junior High to the last episode of Degrassi High and the movie afterwards.
Wow. And it holds up?
It holds up. I think so. I think it, like, even, like, the topics that they talk about, having that on stuff today would be, like, a little bit crossing the line. And even, like, I haven't watched a lot of the new generation ones, but they kind of talk a lot about the same things. But you think, like, in the 80s, you know, you have, like, teenage abortion and a dude who, like, shot himself in the head in the school bathroom. You know, one guy's parents both get killed by a drunk driver, so he becomes an alcoholic because he can't handle it.
That's bold.
This is on, like, a TV show for teenagers.
Yeah, because,
so
I mean,
even have that now would be, like, a little bit of a big deal, I think.
Yeah, even when you consider that, like, Saved by the Bell, which was 90s, but their episode about addiction was caffeine pills.
Yeah. Like, well, there was one where, like, the guy was, like, a drug dealer.
Sure. But they didn't want... But Jesse couldn't have been on meth. She couldn't have been on cocaine. She clearly kept cocaine
There's
pills.
There's no time. There's never any time.
I'm so scared.
Yeah, like, I think that even, like, watching Degrassi now was a big deal. Like, even going through watching when my husband was sick. And, like, the one chick was getting beaten up her boyfriend on it. So there was that on there. Like, it was a big deal in the 80s. And I think even, like, pretty much anyone in Canada who grew up in the 80s watched Degrassi.
No one has said watch Degrassi. Sounds like it sounds like it's probably an enjoyable show.
Oh, it is. It's a really good show. I think it holds up still.
Rob. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Tina.
No, I was just saying, like, I would suggest that people watch Degrassi.
It sounds like it's heavy in the same way that, like, My So-Called Life was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I can't believe My So-Called Life was only one season. That's bizarre to me.
Yeah, it felt like it went up forever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because we were just glued to MTV at the point.
Yeah.
At least I was. Rob, what do you got on TV?
I actually have a list of four shows that kind of tied for me as far as just being rather definitive of the 80s and the time period. First of all, it was 81 when MTV actually launched, which at the time, big deal, because back then they actually did play music videos.
Yeah.
Oh, you.
Between MTV, Knight Rider, Married with Children, and where's the other one that I have? Perfect Strangers.
Ah.
Oh, I love Perfect Strangers.
To me, was just very, again, indicative of that time period. I don't think those shows could have existed in any other time period. Like, you couldn't remake Knight Rider or Perfect Strangers now and have them be funny at all. It was just something about the time period that made them all work.
Yeah, Perfect Strangers would be, like, immediately stopped because it's strangely racist or something, even though it's completely fictional.
Mm-hmm.
Did you used to do the Dance of Joy?
Totally.
I did not do the Dance of Joy, but I knew the entire Bibby Bobka Baking song.
I remember I had one crying fit of laughter, like crying fit of how funny it was in an episode of Perfect Strangers where I believe Larry has amnesia. And so Balky's trying to give him his memory back. And so Balky says, "You need to say, my name is Cousin Larry Appleton." And Larry would respond, "My name is Cousin Larry Appleton." And then you go, "Now, how are you?" And you go, "Fine." And every time he went, "Fine," I was in tears. It was such a weird show, but, like, stupid little crap like that would make me laugh.
And I almost want to say Bronson Pinchot, like, he got his start from, was it Beverly Hills Cop?
Yep. That or,
oh, yeah.
Was it that or 48 Hours? No, it was Beverly Hills Cop. You're right.
It was Beverly Hills Cop where he was playing, like, the art of, "No, I'm serious!" And, like, he had, like, 8 minutes of screen time and somehow turned that into an acting career and a TV show.
he almost in without being sort of the weird visionary sort of character that Andy Kaufman was. It was almost Andy Kaufman-y, where his job is to be a foreign person.
Yeah,
I guess.
But you were big on you were big on Knight Rider.
It was a hot show at the time. The car was awesome. I don't know. I was always into Trans Ams. I mean, even back to like Smokey and the Bandit, I was mm-hmm. much more of a Trans Am guy than a Camaro guy. But it was just a cool show. I mean, it had the Hoff in it. How could you have gone wrong?
Well, prior to Knight Rider, here's my question. Prior to Knight Rider, what was Hoff? Because I honestly only know him from Knight Rider and then from Van Halen.
Baywatch.
Yeah, exactly. Like, did he have a thing before then? What made him hot? Or was it just because he became hot because of Knight Rider?
That's a really good question.
I don't know. It was more if you knew, because I honestly, prior to Knight Rider, I have no memory of the Hoff. And then from there, it goes into German dance songs.
He gained recognition on The Young and the Restless playing Dr. Snapper Foster.
Wow.
His career continued with his leading role as Michael Knight on Knight Rider and as L.A. County lifeguard Mitch Buchanan on Baywatch.
Okay.
So really actually nothing.
Yeah, he was a soap guy.
Yeah. Foster. So he would have been Jill's husband or son.
Yeah.
Your husband.
Is this you speaking from a knowledge of soap opera?
My parents kind of brought me up on Young and Restless.
Okay.
Both my parents.
Yeah, my mom was young and she did Young and the Restless. So I have like weird memories of like certain characters, like that guy with the mustache.
Victor. He's still on it.
There you go, Victor.
He's like a bajillion years old, but he's still on it.
And he was married to, was it Nikki?
Nikki.
Ha! Yeah. Oh my God. Good God, I'm going to have an embolism tonight. And it's going to be because I'm reaching into like weird corners of my brain.
He played Snapper Foster on Young and the Restless, leaving the series as the show wrote out many of their original characters. He played Simon in Star Crash, guest starred on two episodes of Different Strokes.
But he was Michael Knight in those, wasn't he? He was either Michael Knight.
Say.
Because I know
it
Different
Strokes. He was recruited by Brandon Tartikoff, NBC president, to play Michael Knight in 82 to 86.
Because I know the episodes of Different Strokes he was in, because that's right in my bailiwick, and he had Kit. It was when the kids went to Hollywood.
You might be right, because he did the guest star on that in 84, and Knight Rider started in 82, so it was right in the meat of that run.
Because trying to figure out what TV shows I was going to put on this list, I came up against a really hard wall, because I've mentioned before, I was raised by my television. Like, I watched everything.
Okay, so I just want to go into this whole Snapper Foster thing, because soap operas have always confused me, because it's one of those things that I can't stand in movies where like they do a sequel and they recast some fairly main characters with new actors. So you were trying to debate Sina whether he was like the son of another character.
I think he was, like, because Jill's last name was Foster.
Okay, so Snapper Foster is a fictional character on The Young and the Restless, an original character since the show's inception. He was originally played by William Espy from 73 to 75. Hasselhoff played him from 75 to 82. Espy reprised the role in 2003, and then Hasselhoff re-reprised the role in 2010.
Wow.
What the fuck?
Weird. He's back on it.
It's like, that's where I'm just like, okay, I'm done. So you played the character in the first movie and the fourth movie, but not the second, third, or the fifth movie. Yeah, that's too much.
So defend yourself, Sina.
For what?
I don't know. For being our only voice from soap operas.
We've already given the Hoff far too much airtime on this podcast.
My problem with soap operas is like, when the kid's about 8, and then they send them away to boarding school, and then they come back 3 months later and they're 16. But no one else is aged.
Oh, wow. That's comic book logic, too.
Yeah. But soap operas are, like, known for it. It's like, oh, you're going away to boarding school, and then they come back, like, you know, a few months later, and they're, like, suddenly 16 or an adult, but everyone else is the same age.
So is this one of those situations where with Snapper Foster, where if you were watching the episodes where these guys came back, is it where they walk through the door and everybody kind of goes, oh, Snapper, and one and the other person goes, my son. So you're already like caught up on who he is.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure like the people would know them, like the characters would know who it was.
Dude, they flip-flopped actors back and forth so many times, they would have to do that just so the audience knows who the hell this person is.
So it's not confusing when he walks in.
They do that a lot on soap operas, though.
Oh, really? People change positions all the time?
Yep, actors change.
I guess that makes sense given the sort of grueling. I've heard working at a soap opera is fairly grueling. Just because you're all...
I imagine so.
Yeah, you're doing 4 episodes a week.
Yeah.
Cray. So for me with TV, I was having a hard time with because I could go with any number of like really horrible sitcoms, because there's a gazillion.
Oh sure.
Like so we're gonna go Punky Brewster, we're gonna go Hogan Family, we're gonna go Alf, we're gonna go, yeah, exactly.
Alf.
I decided for my television chunk, I was going to go with the Nickelodeon shows. Very specifically, and this is where my Canadian show comes in, because there was a rock block of Nick shows that I would watch almost every night, and they didn't have that many episodes. So I saw them all like 8 times. So there was like Danger Mouse, there was You Can't Do That on, I'm sorry, I was gonna save that for last, but You Can't Do That on Television, and Out of Control, which was Dave Coulier.
Bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, You Can't Do That on Television was awesome.
Yes.
I remember watching that.
You Can't Do That on Television, the only show my parents, who let me watch horror movies at the age of like 6, said, maybe you should stop watching this, because they they thought it was disrespectful. I don't know. Yeah, I think they probably saw a news report about it.
Weird.
But I had been watching the show for years and years, and then one day they were like, maybe you shouldn't watch that show. I think it was because I was just like starting to kick into puberty mode. So I started to talk back and start to be a little prick. And they blamed the show. I don't know.
Alanis Morissette was on that show.
She was.
She was.
And most of that show was also, there was the one actor, there was only like 2 adults on the show, maybe 3. There was the father, the mother, and maybe there was the 3rd character, but the whole show was more or less concocted by one of them, by Ross, the bald sort of stage director for the show they were doing.
Yeah.
He like wrote half the skits. He did all that. I went on a hunt to try and find like if I could find a website that had those episodes streaming to see if they held up. Really hard to find them.
Yeah, I found that out too, because when I was trying to like look back at them to see like Alanis's episodes and stuff, just because I thought it'd be funny. Mm-hmm. It is hard to find.
But yeah, there's Christine and Lisa and Alistair
and Moose.
Moose is Christine.
Yeah, Moose.
that was Christine's nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like the locker skits. I mean, to this day, Nickelodeon holds on to a bunch of the Nickelodeon tradition with the sliming and the water.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. They have it at their kids' awards.
Yeah. But
What was the game show that Summers hosted?
Oh, Double Dare.
No, yeah, that took a lot of elements from You Can't Do That on Television and incorporated it into it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Nickelodeon TV back then was phenomenal. I don't know whether, I mean, it could be phenomenal now, but I remember I saw the Tomorrow People on there. The old BBC sort of sci-fi show.
Oh, yeah.
They used to have their like movie of the week on Saturday afternoons, but You Can't Do That on Television goes down as probably one of those like defining shows for me.
Nice.
So what else we got on Canadian television?
It's not a Canadian show, but I have to have Saved by the Bell on my list.
Fantastic. Was that was that 80s?
It started in the 80s.
Okay, fair.
Like the earlier episodes are in the 80s, and then it crossed into the 90s.
The Miss Bliss episodes?
Yeah, but even like the after the Miss Bliss ones, like the first few seasons were in the 80s. And I actually did check to make sure. But Saved by the Bell. Mainly for Zach Morris.
No.
Yeah. Zach Morris, come on.
So, okay, I'm not hating.
Rob, were you about Jesse, or were you about Kelly? Thank you.
I think Lisa. I think I was more of a Kelly.
I get it. I was a Jesse. Funny.
Oh, really?
Shocker.
I know.
Not really surprised why.
It's not that surprising when you know people I've been with in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think. Well, you get even like the opening credits of Saved by the Bell. Oh, the fluorescent flying by. I mean, that's 80s all the way.
Oh, yeah, with like the weird patterns and the like strobing neon.
Triangles and shit.
It's like a big Lisa Frank fucking poster.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I am going to transition out of TV, and I'm going to go into computers and video games.
As well you should.
If that's all right with the group.
I'm down.
I'm going to start with home computing, and I'm going to have to go with the Commodore 64.
Oh, my brother. This is why we do a show together. It's on my list.
I owned a 64. I think I actually still have a Commodore 64 in the bottom of a closet somewhere. With the 5 1/4 inch floppy disk drive that you had to plug into it.
I'm smiling. You can't see my smile, but I'm sure you can imagine my smile right now.
I had two games for it. I had Karateka, and I had this Bruce Lee game, which was almost very stick figure-ish.
Yes.
But the reaction time to the joystick was phenomenal. Karateka, great graphics for the time. Yes. Very, very repetitive. But the thing I remember about the Commodore 64 was that it was still based on a 40-character screen, and you had to load a program called Screen 80 onto it to get it to move to an 80-character screen so that if you typed anything and then printed it to your dot matrix printer, what you saw on the screen was what came out on the page. Because before that, one line on the printer was two lines on your screen, and it was very difficult to try to figure out formatting of things on your computer. So you had to load up a program just to make your screen full size so you could type on it.
Nice.
When my father had a shop at the Watchung Flea Market, there was a guy who had computer games, and he had this like sort of crazy crate that, and he sold it to my dad for like $20 or something, and it was literally like a plastic war game case where you'd put your figures, and in it was just filled with floppies, and they were all pirated. So there was this period of time when I was, I don't know, like 8 or 9, where I received an entire crate full of Commodore 64 games.
Nice.
It was heaven. But that Bruce Lee game, funny enough, I was thinking about that less than a year ago. That very game. And I went onto YouTube, and I was like, I need to see how it ended, because I never got that far.
Right.
And you can find people playing walkthroughs for old C64 games if you go looking for it.
I mean, there wasn't even any color. It was just black and white and varying shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember there was the one where you had to, like, climb up this lattice work to get to the different levels on the screen, and then you were, you know, it was different punches and kicks and flying kicks and stuff, but it all used the regular Atari 2600 joystick.
Yep.
But the controls were just so responsive, it was crazy. I mean, legitimately, you and I could plug that game in now, could we ever find it anywhere, and probably have a fucking blast playing it.
I'm going to be honest with you. You can get an emulator for your computer. It rules.
Yes, nice. Yes, I know.
Because my game du jour on the C64 was Mail Order Monsters.
Oh, wow.
You remember this one?
Yep.
So for those not in the know, you basically built your own kaiju. So you had like 6 templates. There was like the Tyrannosaurus one, the squid-looking one, the snake-looking one. They each had their own special abilities. You'd give them stats. Like movement speed, like attack speed, things like that. And then you were on this huge grid map. And the object was somewhere else on the board was another monster, and you would have to tromp through the various areas to feed other little monsters. I don't remember the raised level or whatnot, or whether they just weakened you. And you get also enhancements and boosts and shit like that. So then you'd finally meet the other kaiju on the board, and you'd have your one big fight. And then whoever won, won. Whoever lost, lost. Reload, play again. But, yeah, love that. And Archon, which was like battle chess.
Oh! See, we had Archon for the Super Nintendo.
Ah!
Archon was great.
Did you do any of the C64 old computer gaming? Cyanide?
No, I remember just like having like a regular PC. I don't think it was a Commodore 64. The earliest one I can remember is just like DOS and having like DOS related games with the orange and black monitor.
Old Amber.
Yeah. But I do remember playing Battle Chess.
Oh.
Like specifically a Battle Chess game.
With where like when the pawn would go, I don't know, go after another pawn, there'd be a brief animation where you get to see like, the pawn go and like stab him in the face.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What other C64 games did you play, Rob?
That was basically it.
Okay.
I didn't have a whole lot of them.
Yeah, we had a whole thing.
But, like, honestly, those two were pretty much enough.
Yeah, it was all about... Me and my brother would play, like, summer games. A lot of the games you would see on Nintendo.
Oh, see, now that you're saying that, I do remember having summer games and winter games. Because I remember doing the bobsled for the winter games, where not only did you have, like, the big map that showed you the course, but you almost had, like, a picture-in-picture map that was a cross-section of the bobsled tunnel you were in.
Yes.
And depending on where on the wall or on the curve you kept the center of balance, you could pick up speed or you could flip it. I do remember that now. Yeah, summer games and winter games.
Anytime one of those big sports games came out, they were like my brother's favorite. He would get them, and then we would play them for hours. California games, we played Hacky Sack.
Yep, I played that on the regular Nintendo.
Yeah, we played Hacky Sack for hours.
Yep.
Nice.
Because I had the Commodore 64. I also put the original Nintendo on mine, on my list.
Oh, yep, nice.
Because there was no way there was fights in my house over the original Nintendo, specifically because of Tetris. I lost my Nintendo. Thankfully, it was right around the time the Super Nintendo came out. I lost my computer, my Nintendo, because my mother, my father, and my grandmother would take over the living room, and they would have Tetris tournaments, and they would sit around it for hours.
Oh, my God.
Even to this day, when I visited my grandmother, it was probably about a year ago, and in her bathroom, there's a Game Boy, like an old school black and white big handheld Game Boy with the only game she owns is Tetris.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, Tetris
was... I used
was...
to play the shit out of Tetris on my Game Boy.
Oh, yeah. Like the black and white, the original Game Boy?
Yeah, the original Game Boy. Which I'm pretty sure I still have somewhere. I saw it not too long ago. Somewhere.
All
right.
Yes.
Oop, go ahead.
Nope, that was it. Go.
So what do you got there, Cyanide?
So
next one.
I'm going to transition into candy.
Okay.
And I've got two staples from Canadian. I'm pretty sure Canadian. I don't know if they have in the States. But the first one's Bottle Caps candy. So I don't know if you guys had that.
Oh, yeah, they were Wonka.
We had that here, yep.
Okay, yeah. So with like the different pop flavors of the bottle caps, you'd have like root beer and grape and... Coke. And I remember being like obsessed with those as a kid, and I think they actually still make them, because I remember seeing some a few years ago in the store in like a big box. But I remember they came in like these little like packages where it was like a little papery pack, and you'd get like five in there, like not very many. And I was hoping for like root beer because the other flavors were kind of sucky.
The root beer were the best.
Yeah. And then the other one is Fun Dip, but
yes.
But as we had it was Lick-A-Maid.
Lick-A-Maid, yes!
Which, like, when you say Lick-A-Maid as an adult, it's like Lick-A-Maid. I mean, it's better to say Fun Dip, but...
That stuff was basically fantastic.
Like, you know, the sugar candy that you dip into the powdered sugar.
Yeah, we never did it the way you were supposed to do it. Like, you were supposed to lick that popsicle stick that was basically just compressed sugar.
Yep.
And then dip it into the powdered stuff. Yeah, no. we just used to upend the bag and just swallow the powdered stuff whole and then just chew on the popsicle stick part later.
See, I actually did that. I licked the candy and stuck it in the other candy.
Lick-A-Maid was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with Lick-A-Maid. We had Fun Dip. I'm not even familiar with Lick-A-Maid.
It's basically the same thing. Okay. I think it was just like a different branding of it.
Or, I thought Lick-A-Maid was like the manufacturer of it, like the parent company.
Maybe. Because I remember it actually used to be Lick-A-Maid, but now it's just Fun Dip.
Maybe they got tired of the name.
Lick-M-Aid.
Yeah.
They've gotten letters.
Like, it makes no sense because like you're licking them. The aid? Like, I don't understand. Oh, it was like LIK-M-AID.
It's your aid for, I don't know. I'm not even going to try and analyze this.
No, yeah, it's actually Fun Dip, now manufactured by the Wonka Candy Company, a brand owned by Nestle. It was originally called Lick-A-Maid and was originally manufactured by Fruzola?
Sure.
Fruzola.
Wow.
I'll believe you.
Good stuff.
So those are my two candies from the 80s for sure.
Very nice.
Rob, foodstuffs?
Geez, if we're going to go foodstuffs in the 80s,
I would
have to go Big League Chew.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, Big League Chew and, you know, bubblegum cigarettes. Because there's nothing like letting, you know, 10 and 12-year-old kids pretend they're smoking cigarettes or chewing tobacco.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez. Candy snuff for kids.
Well, that's what Fun Dip was. No, never mind. We never made lines out of Fun Dip or crushed up Smarties.
See, your Smarties are different than our Smarties.
They are.
We've got those big, like, quarter-size, really flat Smarties, don't you?
See, our Smarties are chocolate-covered, candy-covered chocolate.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, ours are, like, basically just, like, chalky sweet tarts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any food stuffs, but if there was one I was going to mention, it would be Cookie Puss, which is
Yeah.
So you're familiar with Cookie Puss?
Yeah, the cereal.
No.
Wasn't there a cereal?
That was Cookie Crisp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think Hatton's talking about the cake.
Yeah, I am talking about the cake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've recently heard stories about your Cookie Puss cake stories.
Cookie Puss is very specifically a Northeastern sort of thing. There's Carvel, and their Cookie Puss was this face made out of like an ice cream cake. His nose is a cone, and he had icing eyes. And it was the best birthday party in the world that you would get a Cookie Puss cake or Fudgy the Whale.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that from American TV.
Yep. But, yeah, what story did you hear, Rob, about my cake things?
It was more of a Fudgy the Whale story.
Yeah,
thing.
Oh, you heard the Fudgy the Whale stories.
Yeah.
Because you could go into Carvel and you can get anything you wanted ever written on them. So we would get really mean messages written for people's birthdays. Statistically speaking, you're the closest to die.
Here's a quick story for you, Hatton. Cookie Puss is an ice cream cake character created by Carvel in the 70s as an expansion of its line of freshly made exclusive products, along with Hug Me Bear and Fudgy the Whale. According to the backstory, Cookie Puss is a space alien who was born on Planet Birthday.
Oh, my God.
His original name was Celestial Person, but the initials CP later came to stand for Cookie Puss in his television commercials.
Yeah, that's what CP stands for now.
Yeah.
Why is there, like, a whole backstory for it?
I have no idea. He has the ability to fly, though he requires a saucer-shaped spacecraft for interplanetary travel. And during the 80s, he was repurposed for St. Patrick's Day as Cookie-O-Puss.
That's awesome.
I did not know all of that about Cookie-Puss. It's fairly frightening.
I don't think anybody's looked at that webpage except for Mr. Carvel.
And it's funny because if you look at the picture that they have on Wikipedia, it is like the most, like, 5-year-old trying to decorate a cake looking thing I've ever seen.
He was so delicious.
Like, I've seen cake fail pictures that look better than what Cookie Puss is.
That's bizarre.
So
good stuff.
I lost track of how many we got left, so.
We have, we come around to Cyanide, we have 4 left.
Jeez.
This is weird.
Let's go speed round.
Along here quick.
Well, the next thing I have is movies with epic songs from the 80s, because it was too hard to pick just one.
Sure.
Hit it.
But I think that's like a thing that defined movies in the 80s for me, is they all had a song. Like some big epic song or montage or just like something for it. And movies today don't really have that. They seem to be missing it. But even think like Flashdance and Ghostbusters and even the original Batman with Bat Dance by Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Proof.
They all had like some kind of big epic song in it.
Which one? Do you have a favorite?
I think probably like the Flashdance one, because I mean that stands out for me as like an 80s movie with a big epic song in it and having that, you know, just like the build up to it and everything. And like that's one of the most well-known ones, I think, too. Like when I think of an 80s movie with a big epic song, I think of Flashdance.
It's mine be Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Oh, very 80s. Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Don't you forget about me.
Yep.
All right. Good call. See, when I think of 80s movies, I didn't necessarily think of, like, standout music that went with it. But when I think of 80s movies, Excalibur comes out of mind to me, because that was probably one of my favorite ones of the time period.
Of course. I love you, Rob.
Really? No. Really?
Look, I'd say Highlander, and we'd all go, yeah, Jamie, we know. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, and The Shining hit in the 80s, too.
Yeah.
Not that had, you know, an epic soundtrack.
I was wondering what song came out of the
soundtrack to The Shining. Little choppy.
Just
like piano music,
yeah,
in there.
A broken piano and twins standing at the end of the hallway.
Tennis ball bouncing off of a wall for 48 minutes. And the sound of a typewriter.
Yeah.
Did you have The Shining on your list as 80s?
I did, because even if you go back and look at it now, I mean, like, the feel of it and the tone of it might hold up, but the look of it just absolutely does not.
And
it's definitely almost a period piece now.
Yeah. Still a beautiful movie.
Like, it'd be like a cult movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's still a great movie. Don't get me wrong. It's still a good one. It's just the visuals of it don't hold up.
Yeah.
And I think anytime you put Scatman Crothers in a movie, it immediately dates itself.
It's true.
Because he was pretty big in a lot of 80s movies. I also remember him from Silver Streak.
Oh, yeah.
Very definitively an 80s movie.
And Transformers the movie.
Oh, yeah. Played jazz.
Yep.
I just tried watching Room 237 again last night. One of these days, I'm going to make it through that entire thing.
Oh, that's the documentary, right?
Yes, yeah. It's a sort of documentary.
It's messed up.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching it, and about halfway through it derailing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really a real bizarre documentary. I have to say some of it is faked. Because I can't believe that all of that was legitimately how people saw that movie.
Right.
But yeah, one of these days I'll make it through.
I have in my movies, I went specifically with movies where the special effects are definitively 80s. Some of them aged worse than others, but so the two that kind of go in that are Tron.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And The Last Starfighter.
Yes.
Both big favorites of mine, but they have clearly CGI before CGI knew what it was doing, so they're revolutionary, and we need them in our like sort of historical movie overse, and I love them as films, but you look at them and you're like, oof, I can count the pixels.
Yeah.
And Last Starfighter, still to this day, one of my favorite films, obviously. It's like you and Excalibur. It just comes with the territory. But when you see the spaceship flying and you're like, that has 4 polygons. That ship right there. That's a triangle.
Yeah. But at least, you know what? It was good for the time period.
Oh, yeah.
It just didn't age well. There are movies that didn't age well that were still shitty for the time period. So, I mean, that's saying something, that The Last Starfighter at the time was fantastic.
Yeah. And I can still watch it and go, yep, it aged poorly, but it doesn't age disgustingly bad. Like, you can still look at it and go, all right, fine. You get away with it.
Right. All right there, Sinead. What do you got next?
Well, I wanted, I guess, circling back to music.
Hit it.
New Kids on the Block. And I was a girl in the 80s, so we got to have New Kids on there. I pretty much do. I mean, you know, listening to pop music and that being for, like, the first real boy band. I mean, there probably was others, but I mean, to be like mainstream and like a big deal and just like wearing my New Kids tapes out completely so you couldn't even see the writing on them anymore. They're just basically black cassettes. And I kind of just knew what they were by like the little bits of writing that was left on them. But yeah, totally about New Kids. And funny, I had like a poster of them in my room, and when I changed, I'd like kind of move out of the view of the poster because I didn't want them seeing me changing.
Oh, because they were staring at you.
Mm-hmm.
So did you know
exactly?
Did you know all their names? Like, did you have your favorite?
Yeah, I think my favorite was probably Joey.
Everybody loved Joey.
Yeah, but I do have a Jordan Knight like doll, like a Barbie doll, but a Ken doll Jordan one. And me and my friend both had Jordan ones. And when I was actually going through, because I still have almost all my Barbies, and I still have my Jordan ones, and they had like a little fake rat tail on the back.
Fantastic. Yep.
All right.
No comments on New Kids.
My sister listened to them, and she had I am not even remember what they were called. They were like these little single cassette tapes. They weren't singles, but they were like, I want to say, 1 inch by 2 inches that you'd plug into player.
Yeah.
And I want to say she had like Hangin' Tough on that. But they were just little cartridges that you'd play one song off of.
Yeah, I remember those.
That's funny.
I have very little less. I have less to say about the New Kids.
Yeah, if we're gonna go music for the '80s, I was very much into the burgeoning hip hop movement in the '80s.
Oh yeah.
So you got groups like Beastie Boys, Run DMC, Eric B. and Rakim, Big Daddy Kane. Those were all very much in my cassette player and on my record player when I was going through high school.
Yeah, I missed the hip hop movement until I was older. But are we just jumping to me now? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, it's fine.
Went quiet. Sorry. Everybody went whoosh. For music, I have two things. They both include Michael Jackson, because one of them's Michael Jackson. Because I was a huge Michael Jackson fan when I was younger. But I did put We Are the World.
Oh, yeah.
That was very 80s.
That was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. And that's because, yeah, it was on every channel. Like, that was simulcasted. I remember, like, that day where it was just... And because I pulled up the list of names. Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, James Ingram, Tina Turner, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. I did, like, Bette Midler was in there. Does anybody remember Bette Midler being in it? But yeah, We Are the World. It's still on my playlist on occasion. It'll randomly select, and I'll be like, "All right, I guess I can listen to this once," and then I'll take it off the playlist for 6 months. Can't really listen to it too much. Jump to you, Cyanide. We're in speed round, apparently.
Lightning round.
Still 80s. I have to say Madonna for 80s music. I mean. Pretty much like I was lucky growing up. My parents actually had really good taste in music. So all their CDs were like Madonna and Peter Gabriel.
Oh, nice.
And like actually like good stuff. Whereas my friend's parents listened to like Patsy Cline. So we'd always like make tapes off of my parents' CDs because they actually had decent taste in music. And that was where I heard Madonna. It was actually from my parents. So my mom actually had like a Like a Prayer t-shirt, and they had like a whole pile of Madonna CDs. And I think it's like, you know, defining music in the 80s, especially with women and pop music, you wouldn't have, you know, Britney Spears and, you know, Christina Aguilera and any of those other ones in the 2000s if you didn't have Madonna in the 80s leading the way for them.
Oh, 100%. And she was, in the same way Michael Jackson was, she was a pioneer with rock videos.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, all of hers were like movies, basically.
Yeah, that Like a Prayer video was amazing. Mm-hmm.
And it was like a big deal, and the church got all pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because the statue comes to life, and it cries, and there's so much imagery going on there.
Yeah, and there's like burning crosses in the background and stuff, and because it was like a black man and white Madonna making out.
Oh yeah, that's right. They do make out in there.
Yeah, like it was a big deal. Yeah, yeah, I think like definitely Madonna music. I mean, like how you are with, you know, We Are the World. I still have Madonna on any of my playlists that I have, whether it's my iPod or I'm listening to Spotify. I always have some kind of Madonna thrown in there to listen to.
Yeah, Madonna hits my playlist on occasion, especially Like a Prayer very specifically. That song is probably my favorite by her. And that Spanish lullaby song.
Oh, La Isla Bonita?
Yes. Couldn't remember the title of it.
Isn't that the island that they made the dinosaurs on?
That's Isla Nova, isn't it, or something else?
Isla Sorna.
Yeah, and there's like three of them.
Yep.
Rob.
So I'm going to transition personally to coin-operated arcade games, because there was a good number of them since we were just recently out at the Fantastic Yestercades out in Somerville.
Yes'm.
Oh, nice.
Fantastic. It's like all retro gaming, pinball, coin-op games, but you just basically pay a flat fee per hour, and you just go in there and play whatever you want. It doesn't cost any money to actually play the games. So my big jam in the arcade games when I was a kid was the sit-down vector graphic Star Wars.
Ah, yes.
Nice.
It was so fantastic. You had the dogfights. You had the towers on the surface of the Death Star. And then you had the trench run that you had to manipulate your way through. And it had voice acting from the actors in the movie, which was pretty cool for the time. It was all digitally sampled, but the fact that they used them made it a lot more legit. And a lot of places had the stand-up ones. Hard to find the sit-down ones, but the sit-down one was pretty badass for the time.
Nice.
It's a beautiful game. Oh, so much fun.
And for vector graphics, it still holds up.
Yeah. Oh, it's you could sit down and you immediately right back to being a kid playing that game.
Absolutely.
It's well known. My Tron lust, I can sit at Yestercades, and did when we were over there. I sat in front of the Tron machine for like an hour. Because I'm not good at it, but man, do I love it. Because it's got
the light cycles, I was just going to say.
Yep.
You're a light cycle guy.
I'm a huge light cycle guy. I yearn for the day there is a good and proper light cycle game. And every time they come out with a new Tron game, because they've done a couple, I get it in the hopes that the light cycles are what I want them to be.
And but you're not a Disc of Tron guy.
I had it on the Intellivision, which is something I forgot to put on my list. But yeah, not as much as the light cycles. I, for whatever reason, zooming around and creating walls of light behind you that you can crash into each other, I'm all over. Like when when Snake, like you got your first cell phone and it had that like really shitty number Snake game.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in.
Oh yeah.
It's basically Tron Light Cycle solo.
Now, if they made a first-person light cycle game...
You're speaking my dreams.
That would be awesome.
Especially if it gave you a little mini-map so you know you're not crashing into your own wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was just going to say that. You'd have to have like the little mini like translucent overlay map up in the corner, but you've got a first-person perspective of like just your front tire in front of you.
You and I are already designing a game that I've been designing in my head for years.
Awesome. Let's make it happen.
Done.
Cyanide, what do you got?
I've actually don't got anything else. I think because I ended up combining some of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have anything else for 80 stuff.
Did you have any, just to jump on the same one, did you have any coin ops, any sort of old school arcade stories from Canada where you allowed them?
No, like I don't think there really was any. Like where I live, it's only 100,000 people, so we don't really have... an arcade. Like, there was one like later on in maybe like the late 90s that had like video game, like arcade games, but there really wasn't much in the 80s. Oh, I do have one. We had Wheelies, a roller rink that had a few arcade games there, but I remember that being a big deal in the 80s.
Roller rinks.
And it was like, yeah, specifically like we'd go on Sunday afternoons. I don't know why it was Sundays, but going like Sunday afternoons with my friends and getting dropped off there for a few hours and just roller skating around and hanging out there. That was a big deal.
We had an ice rink near me. I never did the roller skating. I had bad ankles. So we'd go on the ice rink, and my ankles would tip inwards. I'd be like, I'm leaving. I'm done. I'm going to go in the arcade room.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I could always do the roller rinks when I was a kid. They all had the quad skates.
Yep.
So that was okay. I couldn't do rollerblades because I had the same thing. I get on rollerblades or on ice skates now, and like either my ankles want to break inwards or they want to break outwards. But mm-hmm. either way, my ankles want to shatter.
Yeah.
So now, if they made quad ice skates all over it, or like tracks, like if they had like snowmobile tracks on ice skates, I'd be all over it. But they don't. So, but yeah, roller rinks were big too when I was in high school and junior high school. Like that was the Friday night thing. Everybody would get together at the roller rink for like 3 hours.
Yeah, we only had the sports arena near me, so it was just ice skating.
Well, you missed out then.
Clearly. Sorry to kill the conversation about roller skates. Jeez.
Because on roller skating, when you fell, you didn't get wet.
No.
I mean, unless you were going really fast when you fell. But that's, you know, that's different.
Well, it's concrete, so I mean, you can still, like, wipe out and scuff yourself up.
What roller skating rink did you go to that had a concrete floor?
It was concrete. It was concrete inside.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't have to worry about it. They have universal health care.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
I don't think anyone was ever going that fast.
It wasn't actually a roller skating rink. It was just an abandoned parking lot.
Well, it was like a warehouse building. Okay. And then like the front part was just like a little restaurant and arcade games and like the lockers to put your stuff in. And then back half was just the roller rink area.
Yeah,
and
no,
had, like
they...
a little DJ booth.
So the guy could say this is a couple skate only, couples only.
It was snowball skates.
Okay.
And you had to like, you know, like scramble and be like, oh, you know, is someone gonna ask me to skate?
Yeah, I never had that problem. I knew the answer was no, so the minute the guy said, I'll just go over the arcade or get myself a hot dog.
For a minute, I thought you were playing it too cool for the room. I thought, like, yeah, I never had that problem. Ladies are just pouring over Rob.
Oh, yeah, clearly that still happens, which is, you know, why we're recording tonight.
I think that pretty much sums up our 80s.
Yeah, I think that pretty much. Yeah, now that we've gotten back into the painful high school memories section of the 80s show, fantastic.
Circle back around.
I'm going to go grab a new Coke and or a Crystal Pepsi and drown my sorrows.
Can't get a tab unless you order something. Wrap us up, sir.
Okay. I think we're done.
I was saying, like, give the promotions and all of the...
Oh, hey, you know what we didn't do?
What?
Talk about Zach Morris's butt.
Well, that either.
Yeah.
But let's now that we're wrapping up after this fantastic episode, we haven't done a little something-something at all.
Hit it.
So our A Little Something Something shout-outs this week go to Faces and Aces Las Vegas, Classy Little Podcast, The Quadcast, Dark Angels and Pretty Freaks, The Geek Dig Podcast, Heroes and Coffee, The Comic Noob Show, and our special guest, Cyanide, from Little Geek Lost.
Whoop.
So make sure to check out hashtag Potter and Family, the only hashtag for all of your podcasting needs, and find some fantastic shows.
And I would just like to add in the thank you once again to Awesome Talk TV for having us. I know when we recorded our last episode, it was the same day we were on the air with them, but they were wonderful hosts. We had a wonderful time. You can see our episode over at Awesome Talk TV on the YouTubes.
Yep. I'm trying to make that little Potter and Family shill sound more and more professional every time because I keep having people direct message me going, dude, we're totally audio lifting that because it just sounds like a Price is Right promotion.
So are there any shout-outs, things you'd like to give to the world, Ms. Cyanide?
No.
Well, that was easy.
All right, then.
I think that wraps up the 80s.
I think it really does. They leave us not with a bang, but with a whimper.
That's true. And so let's just tear the wall down and say goodnight.
Tear this wall down, Mr. Gorbachev. Nice. Nice. I like that.
Thank you.
But...
Now we'll just stumble over each other for another 10 minutes.
It's like the British taking. It's like the rebels taking over the Death Star.
Ah!
They're here, sir.
They both flat.
So May is an interesting month because we actually have three Tuesdays in May that we're releasing episodes.
Oh my God! It's a 3 months ever.
It is. This is going to be the first one. We don't yet know what our second one is going to be, but we do know that our third one is going to be a huge epic crossover event of massive proportions with the guys from Pre-Recorded Live and Blacker Than Black Times Infinity. So nice. Details will be forthcoming. Keep it tuned.
And yes, thank you everybody to, we've seen a huge amount of growth. Apparently you guys are starting to find us out there. So if this is your second episode to the show or third episode after The Quest and Daredevil, welcome, and we hope you enjoy what you hear, and please let us know what you think on the Facebook/somethingcast, the Twitter at STSTcast, send us an email at somethingsomethingcast@gmail.com. Also, if you use iTunes or any, we'll get you there in a second. If you use iTunes, make sure to send us a review, however many stars. We like 5 of them, but we understand if we said something that offended. Yeah, reviews help us out, and, you know, subscribing on your podcast software, and we are also now on Google Play Music, so you can find us there if you have a subscription. Rob.
Yep, and on the Stitcher as well. I was just going to say on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music.
I gotcha, see?
No, we're good.
Then without any more to say, I am James Hatton.
I am Podcast Rob.
And who are you?
I'm Cyanide from Little Geek Lost.
And we will see you guys next decade.
Later.
Butts. When I wake up in the morning and the market's out of water, I don't think I'll ever make it on time. By the time I got my books and I give myself a look, I'm at the corner just in time to see the bus fly by. It's alright, cause I'm safe by the bell. If the teacher pops a test, I know I'm in a mess, and my dog ate all my homework last night. Right below in my chair, she won't know that I'm there. If I can hand it in some butter, it'll be alright. It's alright, cause I'm safe by the bell. It's alright, cause I'm safe by the bell.
Is this the part of the show where I say stuff as a sound check and then you play it back and I don't realize that you're playing it back and I think you're asking me to say more stuff so I start talking again?
We can do that part of the show. So you just did that. Mandy, if you could say something.
Butts.
Fair enough. Can you say something a little longer than butts?
No.
All right. That should be enough.